Sometime around dawn, insofar as dawn happened in the mines, the witches were led to a river somewhere deep in the mountains, where a couple of barges were moored. A small boat was pulled up to a stone jetty.
"This will take you right through the mountains," said the king. "I think it goes all the way to Genoa, to tell the truth."
He took a large basket off an attendant dwarf.
"And we've packed you some lovely food," he said.
"Are we going to go all the way in a boat?" said McGrath.
She gave the wand a few surreptitious flourishes.
"I'm not good at boats."
"Listen," said Granny, climbing aboard. "The river knows its way out of the mountains, which is more than we do. We can use the brooms later on, where the landscape's acting a bit more sensible."
"And we can have a bit of a rest," said Nanny, sitting back.
Magrat looked at the two older witches, who were making themselves comfortable in the stern, like a couple of hens settling down on a nest.
"Do you know how to row a boat?" she said.
"We don't have to," said Granny.
Magrat nodded gloomily. Then a tiny bit of self-assertion flashed a fin.
"I don't think I do, too," she ventured.
"That's all right," said Nanny. "If we sees you doing anything wrong, we'll be sure to tell you.
Cheerio, your kingship."
Magrat sighed and picked up the oars.
"The flat bits go in the water," said Granny helpfully.
The dwarfs waved. The boat drifted out into midstream, moving slowly in a circle of lantern light. Magrat found that all she really had to do was keep it pointing the right way in the current. She heard Nanny say,
"Beats me why they're always putting invisible runes on their doors. I mean, you pay some wizard to put invisible runes on your door, and how do you know you've got value for money?"
She heard Granny say, "No problem there. If you can't see 'em, you know you've got a proper invisible rune."
She heard Nanny say, "Ah, that'd be it. Right. Let's see what we've got for lunch." There was a rustling noise.
"Well, well, well.
What is it, Gitter?"
"Pumpkin."
"Pumpkin what?"
"Pumpkin nothing. Just pumpkin, pumpkin."
"Well, I suppose they've got a lot of pumpkin," said Magrat. "You know how it is at the end of the summer, there's always so much in the garden. I'm always at my wit's end to think of new types of chutney and pickles to use it all up." In the dim light, she could see Granny's face, which seemed to be suggesting that if Magrat was at her wit's end, it was a short stroll.
"I," said Granny, "have never made a pickle in my life."
"But you like pickles," said Magrat.
Witches and pickles went together like... She hesitated before the stomach-curdling addition of peaches and cream, and mentally substituted... things that went together very well. The sight of Nanny Ogg's single remaining tooth at work on a pickled onion could bring tears to the eyes.
"I likes 'em fine," said Granny. "I get some given to me."
"You know," said Granny, investigating the recesses of the basket, "whenever I deals with dwarfs, the phrase duck's arse swims across me mind."
"Mean little devils. You should see the prices they tries to charge me when I takes my broom to be repaired," said Granny.
"Yes, but you never pay," said Magrat.
"That's not the point," said Granny Weatherwax. "They shouldn't be allowed to charge that sort of money. That's thieving, that is."
"I don't see how it can be thieving if you don't pay anyway," Magrat persisted.
"I never pay for anything," said Granny. "People never let me pay. I can't help it if people give me things the whole time, can I? When I walk down the street, people are always running out with cakes they've just baked, and fresh beer, and old clothes that have hardly been worn at all. Oh, Mistress Weatherwax, pray take this basket of eggs," they say. People are always very kind. Treat people right, and they'll treat you right. That's respect. Not having to pay," she finished sternly, "is what being a witch is all about."
"Here, what's this?" said Nanny, pulling out a small packet.
She unwrapped the paper and revealed several hard brown discs.
"My word," said Granny Weatherwax, "I take it all back. That's the famous dwarf bread, that is. They don't give that to just anyone."
Nanny tapped it on the edge of the boat. It made a noise very similar to the kind of noise you get when a wooden ruler is held over the edge of a desk and plucked. A sort of hollow boing-oing-oing sound.
"They say it never goes stale, even if you stores it for years," said Granny.
"It'll keep you going for days and days," said Nanny Ogg.
Magrat reached across, took one of the flat loaves, tried to break it, and gave up.
"You're supposed to eat it," she said.
"Oh, I don't think it's for eating," said Nanny. "It's more for sort of, keeping you going," said Granny. "They say that..."
She stopped. Above the noise of the river and the occasional drip of water from the ceiling they could all hear,
Now the steady slosh-slosh of another craft heading towards them.
"Someone's following us," hissed Magrat.
Two pale glows appeared at the edge of the lamplight. Eventually they turned out to be the eyes of a small grey creature, vaguely frog-like, paddling towards them on a log. It reached the boat. Long, clammy fingers grabbed the side, and a lugubrious face rose level with Nanny Ogg's.
"Hello," it said. "It's my birthday."
All three of them stared at it for a while. Then Granny Weatherwax picked up an oar and hit it firmly over the head. There was a splash and a distant cursing. "Horrible little bugger," said Granny as they rowed on. "Looked like a troublemaker to me."
"Yeah," said Nanny Ogg. "It's the slimy ones you have to watch out for."
"I wonder what he wanted," said Magrat.
After half an hour, the boat drifted out through a cave mouth and into a narrow gorge between cliffs. Ice glistened on the walls, and there were drifts of snow on some of the outcrops. Nanny Ogg looked around guilelessly, and then fumbled somewhere in the depths of her miniskirts and produced a small bottle. There was a glugging noise.
"I bet there's a fine echo here," she said after a while. "Oh, no, you don't," said Granny firmly.
"Don't what?"
"Don't sing that song."
"Pardon, Esme?"
"I ain't going," said Granny, "if you insists on singing that song."
"What song would that be?" said Nanny innocently.
"You know the song to whom I am referring," said Granny icily. "You always get drunk and let me down and sing it."
"Can't recall any song like that, Esme," said Nanny Ogg meekly.
"The one," said Granny, "about the rodent that can't ever be persuaded to care about anything."
"Oh," said Nanny, beaming as light dawned. "You mean the hedgehog can never be, but
that's the one."
"But it's traditional," said Nanny. "Anyway, in foreign parts, people won't know what the words mean."
"They will the way you sings them," said Granny. "The way you sings them, creatures what lives on the bottoms of ponds know what they mean."
Magrat looked over the side of the boat. Here and there, ripples were edged with white. The current was running a bit faster, and there were lumps of ice in it.
"It's only a folk song, Esme," said Nanny Ogg.
"Eh," said Granny Weatherwax. "I should just say it is a folk song. I knows all about folk songs. Heh, you think you're listening to a nice song about cuckoos and fiddlers and nightingales and whatnot, and then it turns out to be about something else entirely," she added darkly. "You can't trust folk songs. They always sneak up on you."
Magrat fended them off a rock. An eddy spun them around slowly.
"I know one about two little bluebirds," said Nanny Ogg.
Said Magrat.
"They may start out by being bluebirds, but I bet they ends up some kind of metaphor," said Granny.
Granny, said Magrat.
"It was bad enough Magrat telling me about maypoles and what's behind them," said Granny. She added wistfully, "I used to enjoy looking at a maypole of a spring morning."
"I think the river's getting a bit sort of rough," said Magrat.
"I don't see why people can't just let things be," said Granny.
"I mean, really, quite rough, really," said Magrat, pushing them away from a jagged rock.
"She's right, you know," said Nanny Ogg. "It's a bit on the choppy side."
Granny looked over Magrat's shoulder at the river ahead. It had a cut-off look such as might be associated with, for example, an imminent waterfall. The boat was now surging along. There was a muted roar.
"They never said anything about a waterfall," she said.
"I expect they thought we'd find out for ourselves," said Nanny Ogg, gathering up her possessions and hauling Grebo out of the bottom of the boat by the scruff of his neck. "Very sparing with information, your average dwarf. Thank goodness witches float. Anyway, they know we've got the brooms."
"You've got brooms," said Granny Weatherwax. "How am I supposed to get mine started in a boat? Can't run up and down, can I? And stop moving about like that, you'll have us all over."
"Get your foot out the way, Esme."
The boat rocked violently. Magrat rose to the occasion. She pulled out the wand just as a wavelet washed over the boat.
"Don't worry," she said. "I'll use the wand. I think I've got the hang of it now."
"No!"
screamed Granny Weatherwax and Nanny Ogg together. There was a large, damp noise. The boat changed shape. It also changed colour. It became a cheery sort of orange.
"Pumpkins!" screamed Nanny Ogg as she was gently tipped into the water. "More bloody pumpkins!"
Lilith sat back. The ice around the river hadn't been that good as a mirror, but it had been good enough. Well, a wishy-washy, overgrown girl, more suitable to the attentions of a fairy godmother than to being one, and a little old washerwoman type who got drunk and sang songs, and a wand the stupid girl didn't know how to use. It was annoying. More than that, it was demeaning. Surely Desiderata and Mrs. Goggle could have achieved something better than this. You derived status by the strength of your enemies. Of course, there was her. After all this time? Of course, she approved of that, because there would have to be three of them. Three was an important number for stories. Three wishes, three princes, three billy goats, three guesses, three witches. The maiden, the mother, and the other one. That was one of the oldest stories of all. Esme Weatherwax had never understood stories. She'd never understood how real reflections were. If she had, she'd probably have been ruling the world by now.
"You're always looking in mirrors," said a petulant voice. "I hate it when you're always looking in mirrors."
The Duke sprawled in a chair in one corner, all black silk and well-turned legs. Lilith would not normally allow anyone inside the nest of mirrors, but it was technically his castle. Besides, he was too vain and stupid to know what was going on. She'd seen to that. At least, she thought she had. Lately, he seemed to be picking things up.
"I don't know why you have to do that," he whined. "I thought magic was just a matter of pointing and going whoosh."
Lilith picked up her hat and glanced at a mirror as she adjusted it.
"This way's safer," she said. "It's self-contained. When you use mirror magic, you don't have to rely on anyone except yourself. That's why no one's ever conquered the whole world with magic, yet. They try to take it from other places, and there's always a price. But with mirrors, you're beholden to no one but your own soul."
She lowered the veil from the hat brim. She preferred the privacy of a veil outside the security of the mirrors.
"I hate mirrors," muttered the Duke.
"That's because they tell you the truth, my lad."
"It's cruel magic, then."
Lilith tweaked the veil into a fetching shape.
"Oh, yes. With mirrors, all the power is your own. There's nowhere else it can come from," she said.
"The swamp woman gets it from the swamp," said the Duke.
"And it'll claim her one day. She doesn't understand what she's doing."
"And you do?"
She felt a pang of pride. He was actually resenting her. She really had done a good job there.
"I understand stories," she said. "That's all I need."
"But you haven't brought me the girl," said the Duke. "You promised me the girl, and then it'll all be over, and I can sleep in a real bed, and I won't need any more reflecting magic."
But even a good job can go too far.
"You've had your fill of magic," said Lilith sweetly. "You'd like me to stop? It would be the easiest thing in the world. I found you in the gutter. Would you like me to send you back?"
His face became a mask of panic.
"I didn't mean that. I just meant, well, then everything would be real. Just one kiss, you said. I can't see why that's so hard to arrange."
"The right kiss at the right time," said Lilith. "It has to be at the right time, otherwise it won't work."
She smiled. He was trembling, partly out of lust, mainly out of terror, and slightly out of heredity.
"Don't worry," she said. "It can't not happen."
"And these witches you showed me?"
"They're just part of the story. Don't worry about them. The story will just absorb them, and you'll get her because of stories. Won't that be nice?
And now shall we go? I expect you've got some ruling to do." He picked up the inflection. It was an order. He stood up, extended an arm to take hers, and together they went down to the palace's audience chamber. Lilith was proud of the Duke. Of course, there was his embarrassing little nocturnal problem, because his morphic field weakened when he slept, but that wasn't yet a major difficulty. And there was the trouble with mirrors, which showed him as he really was. But that was easily overcome by banning all mirrors save hers. And then there were his eyes. She couldn't do anything about the eyes, there was practically no magic that can do anything about someone's eyes. All she'd been able to come up with there were the smoked glasses. Even so, he was a triumph. And he was so grateful. She'd been good for him. She'd made a man of him for a start. Some way downriver from the waterfall, which was the second highest anywhere on the disc and had been discovered in the year of the revolving crab by the noted explorer Guy de Yo-Yo. Of course, lots of dwarfs, trolls, native people, trappers, hunters, and the merely badly lost had discovered it on an almost daily basis for thousands of years, but they weren't explorers and didn't count. Granny Weatherwax sat in front of a small fire with a towel around her shoulders and steamed.
"Still, look on the bright side," said Nanny Og. "At least I was holding my broom and you at the same time, and Magrat had hers. Otherwise we'd all be looking at the waterfall from underneath."
"Oh, good. A silver lining," said Granny, her eyes glinting evilly.
"Bit of an adventure, really," said Nanny, grinning encouragingly. "One day we'll look back on this and laugh."
"Oh, good," said Granny.
Nanny dabbed at the claw marks on her arm. Grebo, with a cat's true instinct for self-preservation, had clawed his way up his mistress and taken a flying leap to safety from the top of her head. Now he was curled up by the fire, dreaming cat dreams. A shadow passed over them. It was Magrat, who had been combing the riverbanks.
"I think I've got nearly everything," she said as she landed. "Here's Granny's broomstick, and, oh yes, the wand."
She gave a brave little smile. "Little pumpkins were bobbing to the surface. That's how I found it."
"My word, that was lucky," said Nanny Og encouragingly. "Hear that, Esme? We shan't be wanting for food at any rate." "And I found the basket with the dwarf bread in it," said Magrat, "although I'm afraid it might be spoilt."
"It won't be. Take it from me," said Nanny Og. "You can't spoil dwarf bread."
"Well, well," she said, sitting down again, "we've got quite a little picnic, haven't we? And a nice bright fire, and a nice place to sit, and I'm sure there's lots of poor people in the places like Hawondaland and such like who'd give anything to be here right now."
"If you don't stop being so cheerful, Gither Og, I shall give you such a ding around the ear with the flat of my hand," said Granny Weatherwax.
"You sure you're not catching a chill?" said Nanny Og.
"I'm drying out," said Granny Weatherwax, "from the inside."
"Look, I'm really sorry," said Magrat. "I said I was sorry."
Not that she was quite certain what for, she told herself. The boat wasn't her idea. She hadn't put the waterfall there. She hadn't even been in a position to see it coming. She'd turned the boat into a pumpkin, but she hadn't meant to. It could have happened to anyone.
"I managed to save Desiderata's notebooks, too," she said.
"Well, that's a blessing," said Nanny Og. "Now we know where we're lost."
She looked around. They were through the worst of the mountains, but there were still peaks around the high meadows stretching to the snow line. From somewhere in the distance came the clonking of goat bells. Magrat unfolded a map. It was creased, damp, and the pencil had run. She pointed cautiously to a smudged area.
"I think we're here," she said.
"My word," said Nanny Og, whose grasp of the principles of cartography was even shakier than Granny's. "Amazing how we can all fit on that little bit of paper."
"I think perhaps it would be a good idea at the moment if we just followed the river," said Magrat, "without in any way going on it," she added quickly.
"Well, I suppose you didn't find my bag," said Granny Weatherwax. "It had personal items in."
"Probably sank like a stone," said Nanny Og.
Granny Weatherwax stood up like a general who's just had news that his army has come second.
"Come on," she said. "Where to next, then?"
What was next was forest, dark and ferociously coniferous. The witches flew over it in silence. There were occasional isolated cottages half hidden in the trees. Here and there a crag loomed over the Sylvanian gloom, shrouded in mist even in mid-afternoon. Once or twice they flew past castles, if that's what you could call them. They didn't look built, more extruded from the landscape. It was the kind of landscape that had a particular type of story attached to it, featuring wolves and garlic and frightened women. A dark and thirsty story, a story that flapped wings against the moon.
"Der Flabbergast," muttered Nanny.
"What's that?" said Magrat.
"It's foreign for a bat."
"I've always liked bats,"
said Magrat, in general. The witches found that by unspoken agreement they were flying closer together.
I'm getting hungry, said Granny Weatherwax, and don't no one mention pumpkin.
There's dwarf bread, said Nanny.
There's always the dwarf bread, said Granny. I fancy something cooked this year, thank you all the same.
They flew past another castle, occupying the entire summit of a crag.
What we need is a nice little town or something, said Magrat.
But the one down there will have to do, said Granny.
They looked down at it. It wasn't so much a town as a huddle of houses clustering together against the trees. It looked as cheerless as an empty hearth, but the shadows of the mountains were already speeding across the forest, and something about the landscape tacitly discouraged nighttime flying.
Can't see many people about, said Granny.
Maybe they turn in early in these parts, said Nanny Og.
It's hardly even sunset, said Magrat. Perhaps we ought to go up to that castle. They all looked at the castle.
No, said Granny, slowly speaking for all of them. We know our place.
So they landed instead, in what was presumably the town square. A dog barked somewhere behind the buildings. A shutter banged closed.
Very friendly, said Granny.
She walked over to a larger building that had a sign unreadable under the grime over the door. She gave the woodwork a couple of thumps.
Open up, she said.
No, no, you don't say that, said Magrat.
She shouldered her way past and tapped on the door.
Excuse me, bona fide travellers.
Bona what? Said Nanny.
That's what you need to say, said Magrat. Any inn has got to open up for bona fide travellers and give them succour.
Has it? Said Nanny, with interest. That sounds like a thing worth knowing.
The door remained shut.
Let me have a go, said Nanny. I know some foreign lingo.
She hammered on the door.
Oh, penny voo, Gunga Din, chop chop pretty damn quick, she said.
Granny Weatherwax listened carefully.
That's speaking foreign, is it? My grandson Shane is a sailor, said Nanny Og. You'd be amazed the words he learns about foreign parts. I expects I would, said Granny, and I hopes they works better for him.
She thumped on the door again, and this time it opened very slowly. A pale face peered around it.
Excuse me, Magrat began.
Granny pushed the door open. The face's owner had been leaning on it. They could hear the scrape of his boots over the floor as he was shoved gently backwards.
Blessings be on this house, Granny said perfunctorily.
It was always a good opening remark for a witch. It concentrated people's minds on what other things might be on this house, and reminded them about any fresh cakes, newly baked bread, or bundles of useful old clothing that might have temporarily escaped their minds. It looked like one of the other things had been on this house already. It was an inn of sorts. The three witches had never seen such a cheerless place in their lives, but it was quite crowded. A score or more pale-faced people watched them solemnly from benches around the walls. Nanny Og sniffed.
"Caw," she said. "Talk about garlic."
And indeed, bunches of it hung from every beam.
"You can't have too much garlic, I always say. I can see I'm going to like it here."
She nodded to a white-faced man behind the bar.
"Good and day, big fella, mine host. Trois beers, pour favor, avec us. Silver plate." "What's a silver plate got to do with it?"
demanded Granny.
"It's foreign for please," said Nanny. "I bet it isn't really," said Granny. "You're just making it up as you goes along."
The innkeeper, who worked on the fairly simple principle that anyone walking through the door wanted something to drink, drew three beers.
"See?"
said Nanny, triumphantly.
"I don't like the way everyone's looking at us," said Magrat, as Nanny babbled on to the perplexed man in her very own Esperanto. "A man over there grinned at me."
Granny Weatherwax sat down on a bench, endeavouring to position herself so that as small an amount of her body as possible was in contact with the wood, in case being foreign was something you could catch.
"There," said Nanny, bustling up with a tray. "Nothing to it. I just cussed at him until he understood." "It looks horrible," said Granny.
"Garlic sausage and garlic bread," said Nanny. "My favourite." "You ought to have got some fresh vegetables," said Magrat, the dietitian.
"I did. There's some garlic,"
said Nanny happily, cutting a generous slice of eye-watering sausage. And I think I definitely saw something like pickled onions on one of the shelves.
Yes, then we're going to need at least 2 rooms for tonight, said Granny sternly.
3, said Magrat very quickly. She risked another look around the room. The silent villagers were staring at them intently with a look she could only describe to herself as a sort of hopeful sadness. Of course, anyone who spent much time in the company of Granny Weatherwax and Nanny Ogg got used to being stared at. They were the kind of people that filled every space from edge to edge. And probably people in these parts didn't often see strangers, what with the thick forests and all. And the sight of Nanny Ogg eating a sausage with extreme gusto would even outrank her pickled onion number as a major entertainment anywhere. Even so, the way people were staring. Outside, deep in the trees, a wolf howled. The assembled villagers shivered in unison, as though they'd been practicing. The landlord muttered something to them. They got up reluctantly and filed out of the door, trying to keep together. An old lady laid her hand on Magrat's shoulder for a moment, shook her head sadly, sighed, and then scuttled away. But Magrat was used to this, too. People often felt sorry for her when they saw her in Granny's company. Eventually, the landlord lurched across to them with a lighted torch and motioned them to follow him.
"How did you make him understand about the beds?" said Magrat.
"I said, 'Hey, Mr. Jigjag, toot sweet, all same, number 3, said Nanny Ogg. Granny Weatherwax tried this under her breath and nodded. "Your lad Shane certainly gets around a bit, doesn't he?" she remarked.
"He says it works every time," said Nanny Ogg.
In fact, there were only 2 rooms up a long, winding and creaky stairway, and Magrat got one to herself. Even the landlord seemed to want it that way. He'd been very attentive. She wished he hadn't been so keen to bar the shutters, though. Magrat liked to sleep with the window open. As it was too dark and stuffy. Anyway, she thought, I am the fairy godmother. The others are just accompanying me. She peered hopelessly at herself in the room's tiny cracked mirror, and then lay and listened to them on the far side of the paper-thin wall.
"What are you turning the mirror to the wall for, Esme?"
"I just don't like them staring like that."
"They only stares if you're staring at them, Esme."
Silence, and then,
"Hey, what's this round thing for, then?"
"I reckon it's supposed to be a pillow, Esme."
"Eh, I don't call it a pillow. And there's no proper blankets, even. What do you say this thing's called?"
"I think it's called a duvet, Esme."
"We call them an eiderdown where I come from. Heh."
There was a respite, then,
"Have you brushed your tooth?"
And another pause, then,
"Ooh, you haven't half got cold feet, Esme."
"No, they ain't. They're lovely and snug."
And another silence, then,
"Boots! Your boots! You've got your boots on."
"I should just think I have got my boots on, Githa Og."
"And your clothes! You haven't even undressed."
"You can't be too careful in foreign parts. There could be all sorts out there, a creeping around."
Magrat snuggled under the, what was it, duvet, and turned over. Granny Weatherwax appeared to need 1 hour's sleep a night, whereas Nanny Ogg would snore on a fence rail.
"Githa! Githa! Githa!
What?
Are you awake?"
"Am now."
"I keep hearing a noise."
"So do I."
Magrat dozed for a while.
"Githa! Githa!"
"What now?"
"I'm sure someone rattled on our shutters."
"Not at our time of life. Now, get back to sleep."
The air in the room was getting hotter and stuffier by the minute. Magrat got out of bed, unbolted the shutters, and flung them back dramatically. There was a grunt and a distant thud of something hitting the ground. The full moon streamed in. She felt a lot better for that and got back into bed. It seemed no time at all before the voice from next door woke her again.
"Githa Og, what are you doing?"
"I'm having a snack."
"Can't you sleep?"
"Just can't seem to be able to get off, Esme," said Nanny Og. "Can't imagine why."
"Yeah, that's garlic sausage you're eating. I'm actually sharing a bed with someone eating garlic sausage."
"Hey, that's mine. Give it back."
Magrat was aware of booted footsteps in the pit of the night, and the sound of a shutter being swung back in the next room. She thought she'd heard a faint oof and another muted thud.
I thought you liked garlic, Esme, said Nanny Ogg's resentful voice.
Sausage is all right in its place, and its place ain't in bed. And don't you say a word. Now, move over. You keep taking all the duvet.
After a while, the velvet silence was broken by Granny's deep and resonant snore. Shortly afterwards, it was joined by the genteel snoring of Nanny, who had spent far more time sleeping in company than Granny, and had evolved a more accommodating nasal orchestra. Granny's snore would have cut logs. Magrat folded the horrible round hard pillow over her ears and burrowed under the bedclothes. Somewhere on the chilly ground, a very large bat was trying to get airborne again. It had already been stunned twice, once by a carelessly opened shutter and once by a ballistic garlic sausage, and wasn't feeling very well at all. One more setback, it was thinking, and it's back off to the castle. Besides, it'd be sunrise soon. Its red eyes glinted as it looked up at Magrat's open window. It tensed. A paw landed on it. The bat looked around. Grebo had not had a very good night. He had investigated the whole place with regard to female cats and found none. He had prowled among the middens and drawn a blank. People in this town didn't throw garbage away. They ate it. He'd trotted into the woods and found some wolves and had sat and grinned at them until they got uncomfortable and went away. Yes, it had been a very uneventful night. Until now. The bat squirmed under his claw. It seemed to Grebo's small cat brain that it was trying to change its shape, and he wasn't having any of that from a mouse with wings on. Especially now, when he had someone to play with.